If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Ready for an amazing deal? Breezeline's fiber-powered internet starting at $19.99 per month offers the reliability you deserve and security you can trust. Whether you're streaming, gaming, or working from home, we've got all your needs covered with speeds up to 1 gig and our 2-year price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with 2 free months of internet, free equipment, and free Wi-Fi your way to protect against cyber threats. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires July 8th, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
Hey, Last Podcast listeners, in an effort to let you know what else we got here on the network, here's an episode of Abe Lincoln's Top Hat. It's the politics show that me and Ben do together. If you want to check it out, awesome. If not, no worries. But either way, here is the episode we just recorded on the State of the Union. Hail yourselves, ladies and gentlemen.
Let the word go forth.
Fool me once.
Are you fired up?
I'm not a crook.
Are you ready to go?
Shame on you.
It's Abe Lincoln's Top Hat, hosted by Ben Kissel.
Boom, you can't get fooled again.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I am Ben Kissel. As always, I'm staring at the face of Marcus Parks. It has a lot less saliva than Joe Kennedy. Isn't that nice, Marcus?
It wasn't saliva, it was chapstick, all right?
We'll get into the Democratic response to Trump's State of the Union a little bit later on here in the show.
Saliva does not stay that shiny for that long.
Oh, what is with politicians and things around their mouth? Remember when Ted Cruz
the
ate
the tonsil stone, yeah.
I've never seen it before. I've never seen a human being with things on the side of their face. Maybe what's the name of the guy that I like so much?
Jeff Bridges
from the movie K-Pax. He's got something going on, but that was a character choice. I don't think that Joe Kennedy III wanted to go on there with a globular. But anyway,
and we'll also get into the actual substantive content of his speeches, as in addition to his chapstick problem.
Some catchphrases thrown around there, but we'll get into that. So let's talk here about the State of the Union. First off, there was a retreat for the Republicans today. Mm-hmm. They were going to celebrate, I suppose, what they thought to be a great State of the Union for Donald Trump. As Marcus and I talked about before the show, the bar is low, and I know that we have to we shouldn't even think about that, but that is the reality. Donald Trump, when he goes and performs publicly at these at events like the State of the Union, if he can speak and not fall over or call somebody fat or call somebody ugly, he gets a standing ovation.
Yes, and remember that it is not about whether Trump did a good job or not, or how good of a performance this is compared to other Trump performances. This should only be compared to other presidential performances. Is that this is not? It should not be seen as whether or not this is a good performance for Donald Trump or a good speech for Donald Trump, but whether this is a good performance for President of the United States of America.
Well, I thought there were some good takeaways, and then, of course, there were some negative takeaways. I'm sure that you've seen the opinion polls at this point. Very high approval for the speech. 8 in 10 Americans who watched said that they felt emboldened, empowered, pride in their country. 2/3 said the exact said similar things. However, you have to remind yourself, Democrats and left-leaning people and a lot of people who have to go to work did not watch. It tends to be State of the Unions are consumed by people who voted for that individual. So a Republican or a Trump supporter that most likely are going to be the ones tuning in to Donald Trump's first State of the Union. So look at those numbers with a little bit of a grain of salt because you don't have a full proper polling sample of the overall electorate.
Right.
So let's get into the substance of the speech, starting with what we all knew he was going to be talking about, touting the economy, touting his tax reform. He's on the road right now again, speaking to individuals about the tax reform. bill that they were able to pass. Folks are going to start seeing some rewards coming in their paychecks beginning here in February. So he's very proud of that. He got a lot of praise, and for the most part, bipartisan support there. The Congressional Black Caucus did not stand one time, even when Donald Trump mentioned African-American unemployment, Black unemployment at a 45-year low. Hispanic unemployment is down, I believe, to I forget what year low, and then unemployment in general is down to a 17-year low. They made a decision not to stand. I thought the optics were a little awkward.
A little bit.
But that was obviously their right. That was their hashtag resist moment. I don't know if it really resonated great with the American people. But again, the people who were watching, most likely Trump supporters, most likely Republicans, and the left probably doesn't care if they seem to be less than cooperative or respectful to Donald Trump. Of course, I believe that we have to respect the presidency as an office, and I was a little bit, not dismayed, but a little bit disappointed in some people for not going to the State of the Union, but I also understand that those individuals represent constituents, and they themselves don't believe that Donald Trump is worthy of the office. So I get it. But at the same time, I think if you're invited to the State of the Union, did you see the misprint?
I didn't see the Union.
The Union, you should go. But that's my personal opinion, and I don't have a problem with them not going. But that's I just feel like we are losing so much of our respect for the country and things like that. And when it comes to Donald Trump, but again, I get the reason why.
Well, I mean. I think part of it is that Donald Trump is taking credit for a lot of things that he should not be taking credit for. I mean, and I know every president does this. You know, when the economy is going well, they say it is my doing. And when the economy is going bad, they say it was the last guy's doing. But with a lot of the economic gains and a lot of the things, the positive things, like just, for example, the Black and Hispanic unemployment that he claimed were due to him. Both of those things, in particular, and a lot of the things that he talked about as his own accomplishments, those were all trends that began in the Obama years and not even late into the Obama years, like mid Obama years. Like
right.
These are things that, and it wasn't early Obama years either, where it could have been attributed to George W. Bush. I mean, these were things that started in the Obama years that could be attributed to the Obama years.
Of course, you could never attribute anything economically to George W. Bush. When it comes to Barack Obama, when Barack Obama took office in 08, we were in a recession.
Yes.
So he did do a good job of getting us out of said recession. Donald Trump took over a fairly strong economy. One of the issues with Obama, because of some of the regulations that he had put in place, was the growth was slow.
Mm-hmm.
And Donald Trump is saying, because I've deregulated so much of our industry, the growth is coming faster because of me. And sort of with the kind of when you drift in NASCAR, kind of drifting on the Obama legacy and saying that he is even taking it one step further as he drifts past and pushes the metal to the floor.
Yeah, and this deregulation.
Or the pedal to the metal.
Deregulation in a lot of these cases is dangerous. You know, he's
in
not.
Some.
Yeah, in some cases, the
such as the offshore drilling,
yes.
Which is anyone, no shore is safe unless, of course, it's in Florida.
Yeah,
which is very interesting. I wonder if he's trying to perhaps win a state in a couple of years.
Extremely interesting,
and of course, their governor is also looking to really get involved in more national politics.
Yeah, deregulation. You know, it's the same thing we see again and again, is that I think we are going to see, because of Donald Trump, some short-term gains. We are going to see some short-term economic gains here.
$1,000 in your wallet if you're receiving that tax credit.
Yeah,
like that.
We're going to be getting that. That is definitely going to happen. But those short-term gains are going to come at the cost of the future. We see it again and again.
Well, which is why I am upset that the corporate tax cut has been made permanent and the middle-class tax cut is not, because who do you think is going to be footing the bill in the future when the taxes go up?
Of
obviously
course.
One party cannot legally have their taxes go up, and the other ones, us, will have our taxes go up whenever they need it.
Absolutely. And I mean, these things are it's going to come back to bite us in the ass in the future.
It's very possible.
And it's a short-term fix, you know, and we talked about this last week.
Yep.
This is a re-election fix. This is something that
midterms in 2020.
Yep. It's a midterm fix. People are going to be seeing some very real economic consequence from Donald Trump's and the Republicans' policies.
Well,
and
let's it's be honest, going to be the average age of a
positive consequence.
Yeah, the average age of a Trump supporter, they don't really have to look to the future. they're not 30 or 25, yeah. You know, they don't really have a lot of future to go. So they say, you know, perhaps the next generation can deal with this as I collect a little bit more money right now. But at the same time, we should remember there are a lot of really hardworking people out there who want to feed their families, and $1,000 goes a long way.
$1,000 does definitely go a long way. But when the consequences come in the future, when the chickens come home to roost on all this, we're going to feel it.
So let's go into a little bit more of the speech. That was economics. That got, applause, fairly bipartisan in some ways. But there is a lot of very interesting things other than the economy, other than tax reform. When it comes to immigration, he equivocates DACA and illegal immigrants, undocumented immigrants, with the MS-13 gang. And he paints them all with the exact same brush. He had individuals there. There was a lot of pawns that Donald Trump used during this 4D chess match, Marcus. in this case, it was – I'm not being mean or rude to these people. They lost a daughter. It was Kayla Suevez, I believe, and Nisa Mickens. They were the two that were killed by MS-13 gang members, and their parents were there. This was in Long Island. So these two individuals lost their life to MS-13 gang members. Horrible. Their family is obviously distraught and devastated. But I think it's important to remember, first of all, immigrants have a lower crime rate than citizens.
Much lower.
And
that's not just to immigrants, that's undocumented immigrants.
Exactly. And second of all, they are not all part of these MS-13 gangs. He's really propping up this gang in a way that I have never seen before, and he is attempting to use them to, again, paint an entire group of people. My father is an immigrant, and to my knowledge, he is not currently in MS-13. I don't think he plans on joining unless they want a 6'4" German immigrant to really go take out the trash. Last time I saw him, he didn't have a teardrop tattoo. At no point has he referenced any kind of like prison activity. So I think it was not needed and dangerous that Donald Trump tries to lump all immigrants together with this gang, which every single person agrees is horrible.
Yeah.
And it's not as if they're allowed to murder or rob or whatever. They get arrested. They get sentenced. What they do is illegal. And they are treated as if they have just committed a crime when they are busted for a crime. Mm-hmm. So they pretend there's this notion out there that somehow undocumented people or illegal immigrants, if you want to say that, get away with murder. And they point to Kate Steinle, this very unique outlier situation that occurred in San Francisco. And obviously the individual that committed that crime, I thought that the jury was wrong, just like Ted Bundy thought. but I thought the jury was wrong in that case. Nonetheless, he is still detained in a federal prison. So it really, it's not true when it comes to this idea that undocumented people have more rights under our current criminal justice system than citizens.
Well, the argument that a lot of anti-immigrant people make is, well, if that it doesn't matter that it's already illegal.
Right.
If those people weren't here at all, then that person would still be alive.
But it's not a reason. That's not how it works.
No, that's not how human beings work. No,
right?
That's not how human beings work. I mean, you can make an argument that if we didn't have cars, then no one would die in car accidents.
Sure.
You know, it's the same kind of logic. And I think
they're just, you know, so there are just there are some bad individuals who are in this country, we all know, and the criminal justice system is dealing with them. Just as they dealt with them under Barack Obama when it comes to ICE, there's a reason Obama was named deporter in chief. You know, this whole notion that somehow the federal government has been easy on these people is it's just simply not accurate. It is not true. And I think it was a massive, obviously, disservice to DACA, to those kids, to try to paint them in the same light as gang members of a very violent gang that is heavily monitored by our intelligence community and by our police force. So he had a soldier from ICE, or a I guess an agent from ICE, Celestino Martinez. He was there, and he pointed him out in the crowd to really talk about, again, MS-13 and how that is really a cornerstone in him formulating his immigration policies. And I think that that is not a good place, because it's not indicative and it's not representative of actual undocumented immigrants, but that is formulating or helping him formulate his immigration policies.
And I think what
it's a worldview issue.
It's very much a worldview issue, but I think it's also what he's trying to paint here is he's trying to paint illegal immigrants as horrific criminals.
So it's classic. It's Willie Horton 2.0.
Well, it's so when they get put into prisons, we won't mind so much.
Well, that's
because, but that's the thing, is that this is not a this kind of tactic is not something that is specific to Donald Trump or to Republicans. I mean, you look back at what Bill Clinton, the Clintons did back in the 90s with super predators.
Dude,
you know, like
I'm
they use
you,
this, they use this gang thing as a way to fill up the prisons, so we won't feel so bad, so we think they deserve it.
Ding, ding, ding. I got a hot take. Ding, ding, ding. Hot take moment. I watched Bill Clinton's State of the Union from 94. I highly recommend it. It sounded more conservative than Donald Trump did last night.
Really?
It is horrific. He is talking about the prison industrial the prison industrial complex, and this is where he proposes three strikes and you're out. And the crowd, Democrats and conservatives, Republicans and liberals, went crazy. They loved it. They ate it up. Bill Clinton was such a wolf in sheep's clothing when it comes to criminal justice reform.
Oh, yeah.
He set us back so far. He, you know, and you know, he's walking in with Strom Thurmond's behind him, literally a member of the KKK. His policies did more damage to communities of color, to impoverished communities, than any Republican could ever even dream of. Go back, watch Bill Clinton 94, and you'll just scratch your head on how any conservative could think that he's a liberal. It is absolutely fascinating.
And that's not to say that what Donald Trump is doing right now is right. Like, we're not doing what about it. We're not doing what aboutism here.
No.
We're just.
This is the problem in this country for years and years and years.
Exactly. What we're saying here is that this is a systematic problem.
Yes.
This is something that has existed for a very long time,
and none of this shit is new.
And
to Obama's credit, he actually took this on, lowering the crack cocaine from 5 times more punished than powdered cocaine. He took it on. I think he could have done a lot more. But he tried at the very least to steer the ship in a more appropriate direction when it comes to our criminal justice reform.
And of course, Jeff Sessions is taking it in the exact opposite direction.
Absolutely.
And one of the people, and it must be noted, maybe we'll get to this later on, but good old Joe Kennedy is right in line with Jeff Sessions when it comes to drugs and marijuana.
It's unbelievable. So you got to read between the lines in these situations. Donald Trump talking about immigration. Talking about the wall now, right? So he's sort of compromised a little bit on the wall. They're calling it a wall structure. Mm. It won't be just $20 million worth of concrete poured on the border, evidently. It'll have gates and maybe a moat. Maybe a Wendy's will be in there.
A moat. It's called the Rio Grande.
I'm sure. Yes. You know,
they're just going to expand the Rio Grande.
I have no, start digging. I have no idea. But it seems as if they're sort of trying to go with a more rational idea, because obviously you can't just have a 20-foot wall on the southern border. Americans, there are so many issues with it. You're going to put it in the middle of the Rio Grande. If you put it in Mexico, it's a war. That is an act of a war.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just not a lot. You have to be rational about the proposal. It seems as if he's trying to come around to an idea that is actually plausible. So we talked about that and then transitioned that into prison reform. And the interesting thing about this prison reform mixed with his immigration program, if you listen to him, he talks about how he wants to find integration programs back into society for people exiting prisons. Okay,
great.
Sounds awesome. I'm like, absolutely, we have to do that. Right now, they are thrown, after 20 years incarceration, 10 years incarceration, thrown out to society with $15 or whatever they came in with. Mm-hmm. Probably not a lot of money.
Yeah.
If they still even have that there, who knows? And then he transitions into talking about immigration in the context of arresting and detaining, which is just the fuel that feeds the prison industrial complex. The 10% of prisons that are private get the vast majority of undocumented individuals. The thing about when we are arrested, technically, theoretically, we have constitutional rights. You arrest an undocumented individual, there is no constitutional right. There is nothing. He's talking about, by the way, reopening Guantanamo Bay. We got Guantanamo Bays all over this country. Private prisons, people are treated just as bad there as we do enemy combatants, as we treat enemy combatants in the now newly opened Guantanamo Bay, which was a fascinating opening, if you think about it in context of what we're talking about regarding war with North Korea. Everything is coming back again.
Yeah.
ISIS, we can tout ISIS going away. We can get to North Korea here in a second. But just back to immigration, you know, talking about the MS-13 gang, bringing on the ICE agent, his immigration policy for me is just absolutely horrific when it comes to this idea of cutting funding for sanctuary cities. His idea that the federal government has so much federal overreach when it comes to states' rights, and I understand immigration is formed at the federal level. I get that, but I still believe that states should have the right to be the home for cities that want to be sanctuary cities if that's the politics that have been agreed upon within those societies. And the idea that the federal government is going to go in and cut funding specifically to New York City, who pays $300,000, I believe, a day to house the Trump family here.
Yes.
It's a total nightmare if you go up Fifth Avenue. I almost wish it would be less. There would be less police around if Donald Trump actually did shoot someone on Fifth Avenue than what's going on right now. So his immigration policy, I find it to be hawkish. I find it to be just not intellectually sound. And that's where I really have an issue. So let's go to another fella that was in the crowd, this guy, Ji Sing Ho. He lost his leg while trying to escape North Korea. Brutal stuff happening there. This transitioned into Donald Trump talking about what's going on in North Korea. And I got the feeling as you were watching this reminded me of a W. Bush.
Yeah.
This reminded me of the early days of selling the Iraq War. North Korea, they spend 24% of their GDP on military. The military says, the U.S. military, Mad Dog, Mattis, and all these folks say that they are closer to having a nuclear warhead on an ICBM. They say they're just a couple of months away, which is much shorter timeline than was previously expected. Just got the feeling ISIS is defeated. They're bragging about ISIS being defeated. As a matter of fact, they had Army Staff Sergeant Justin Peck on there, who saved a person's life while liberating Raqqa.
And ISIS, another thing that was already on the decline, and it may have been accelerated, but it was also accelerated at the cost of civilian lives.
Well, now Donald Trump has sort of freed up the military. So he no longer – Barack Obama would approve every drone strike. There were far too many civilian casualties under Barack Obama. And I think when he pulled out of Syria, it's a series of mistakes from a series of presidents. So I'm not just going to lay the blame on Barack Obama or one individual. But I thought pulling out of Syria there really allowed for ISIS to get a stronghold and create this idea that they might possibly even be able to have a caliphate, which is now completely destroyed. You can just see the magnifying glass shifting to North Korea. And it feels to me, if these State of the Unions are intended, what they are intended to be is a proposal. What proposals will be unveiled or unfurled throughout the year. Mm-hmm. Seems to me like within this year, we might see some actual military action when it comes to North Korea, when it comes to Kim Jong-un. What does it mean? Do we do what we did in Iraq, which theoretically we won after Saddam Hussein was hung? Of course, that's not true. What happens to the 25 million North Koreans? Does China would have a massive refugee problem. I think most of them would go to China. Culturally, it's more similar, specifically when it comes to style of governance. What would happen if we go in and have military action taking place in North Korea? What's victory? What's not victory? Is it a proxy war? Of course, we have the Russians who are heavily financing North Korea. What does that mean? We have a situation where Donald Trump refuses to implement the sanctions that were passed in a bipartisan manner against the Russians.
Which is a much bigger deal than it's being made out to be.
Right.
This is a huge thing. It's about the closest to a constitutional crisis that we've had.
Well, it's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, Congress passed sanctions and Donald Trump refuses to implement
them. Yes, that is a almost textbook constitutional crisis. This is amazing stuff.
So in the context of, global foreign policy and war and peace, what would it look like? We have the Olympics coming up here. We're obviously going to be in South Korea. We have Kim Jong-un attempting to create a little bit of stability, a little bit of peace. The North Korean officials are meeting with some South Korean officials in the demilitarized zone, which is quite significant. They rarely do it. So I do think they want to have a peaceful Winter Olympics, because if they mess with my curling, and if ice skating is interrupted for even a second, I will freak out.
And this is a big year for ice skating.
Huge year, of course.
Yeah, Tanya coming out. Everyone's in it again.
We have the situation that happened in Hawaii a couple of weeks ago when it was the fake missile test. This person was like, it's real. Evidently, by the way, that person who was working for this government of Hawaii, for the government over there that said it's real, he kept on – he like messed up all the time. They're like, he had a history of treating tests as if they were real. I'm like, what? Then why the – that's his only job, is to be intelligent enough to be like, that's – and apparently in the message that they got, it said like test over and over and over again. It's like, no, don't worry about it. It's not real. And the guy still just like freaked out. Yeah. He's the opposite of the guy who saved the world, the Russian, who the Russians thought on their satellites they saw 17 missiles coming from the U.S. He's like, let's think about it. This guy was like, well, we better. And get on it.
And the reason why the governor didn't come out to calm down everyone is because he couldn't remember his Twitter password.
Yes. So,
which I understand. I've forgot my Twitter password many a time.
You know,
I'm also not the governor of a United of a state.
I think it's IGE is his name. Iggy, I think it is. Uh-huh. Yes, that was so embarrassing. but that's okay. So the tension is really there, and you can feel it ramping up. People are getting they are really getting concerned when it comes to North Korea. How much of this is Donald Trump attempting to get a rally around the flag moment? The political side of this, very real. Donald Trump, despite the fact the economy is doing well, sits on a great poll, 40%. Would the American people, do we have the will to go into a military situation with a fatalistic regime? Not yet. And you can just see the slow, but Marcus, I'm telling you.
That's what I'm saying. Not yet. I mean,
give it five,
I don't...
6 months. Oof. He also had the parents of Otto Warmbier, which was unbelievably sad, that case. If you haven't, and I'm assuming you probably haven't, I don't know how a lot of people who have, listen to his father talk about Otto Warmbier's father. Of course, he was the person who was detained for over a year for stealing a propaganda poster. Yeah, dumb thing to do in North Korea. If he did it, I don't believe anything. But who knows? His father described what it was like when Otto Warmbier came back. He said his teeth were rearranged, literally top on the bottom, bottom on the top. His legs were both broken. He couldn't hear. He was blind. I don't believe he had a tongue. He said he was shrieking like a non-human. He was gone.
Yeah.
It's brutal. It's extremely sad. So we have the escapee from North Korea. We have Otto Warmbier's parents there.
It's sugar and spice. You've got the sweet, inspiring story, and you've got the horrific story at the same time.
Exactly. So we want to go liberate this guy or people that this guy represents, and we want to go make sure that never happens again to Otto Warmbier.
Exactly.
And it's just just watch this slow tread, because I see it happening, and I think we're going to get closer and closer and closer to military action in North Korea, and it's not going to happen overnight. But it will happen. My prediction is this year. If it's going to happen, it happens this year. And if it happens before the midterm elections, what does that actually look like? What does that mean? If history is any indication, I think it would help the party in power.
I think so.
And I think that that would help the Republicans.
And you've got the propagandists, even at the low level, in InfoWars, Alex Jones, you know, the alt-right media that are banging the drums to North Korea.
Yeah, the anti-globalist alt-right that don't want foreign intervention unless, of course, Donald Trump is doing it or setting up a global government or being literally the prison plant and helping create it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Against all that stuff, unless Donald Trump is doing it. They've been beating the drum for North Korea for a while now. And
North Korea, I mean, we all, and the thing is, we all agree.
Yeah.
Kim Jong-un is horrible.
Of course,
the people
we all
are
agree.
Starving.
We all agree that.
I wish those 25 million people were living much better lives. Mm-hmm. We all agree.
And the horrific thing that I'm starting to see is that if you really want to see where the policies go, if you want to see what's going to happen in the future, you look at the guys on the bottom. You look at the little guys. You know, all of this shit kind of started from the bottom up. You know, it all starts at these low levels and then slowly worms its way up into American consciousness. And Alex Jones and all those guys, and Breitbart, they beat the drum, man. I mean, they beat the drum hard. And, you know, looking at what possible military intervention in North Korea, like, what does that look like? Do we have troops on the ground marching into Pyongyang? Like, do we have
a couple of
airstrikes? Do we start with airstrikes? And then, because we have quite a few troops in South Korea already.
I would be willing to bet, obviously, they're war gaming a lot of scenarios. I would be willing to bet initially it just begins with airstrikes on their military, complexes, on their airstrips, on all of their missile facilities, the ones that we know of, the best of our knowledge. North Korea, it is quite remarkable, as a matter of fact, how little information slips through.
Yeah.
That place is on lockdown.
Yeah.
So we really don't know what's going on under there.
One thing we did just find out recently is that they think Steam, you know what Steam is?
No.
It's like an online gaming service.
Oh, okay.
You know, or it's a store that you go to where you can essentially buy just computer games.
Okay.
And they released a map of everyone that has a Steam account in the entire world. And there's one little dot in North Korea, where Kim Jong-un lives.
So he's just sitting there playing video games all day.
He's got a Steam account.
That's hilarious. It's also so... What an asshole. People are literally eating bugs, and he's just like, well...
Yeah, I can't say that is an absolute fact.
Honestly, well,
I will admit, that's a meme that I saw.
Yeah.
Well, it was something that... It was an image that I saw on Reddit, but...
Wait until he tries...
It kind of seems like it should be true.
Wait until he tries to swat Donald Trump. Like, Donald, there's a person in the White House with a nuclear bomb. SWAT will go there and take care of business, I guess. I also really, you mentioned underlings. I want to talk about this one point in the speech that has gone completely under the radar from corporate media. Donald Trump was discussing his cabinet, and he was discussing how his cabinet, he wants Congress to give them the right to basically purge anyone who is anti-Trump. It's just kind of subtly put in there.
Mm-hmm. This is the line. He said, "Tonight, I call on the Congress to empower every cabinet secretary with the authority to reward good workers."
Mm. And that sounds like Kim Jong-un.
It sounds exactly
like Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-un. It's very dictator-ish.
It sounds horrible. And to remove federal employees who undermine the public trust or fail the American people.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck does that mean?
And no one... Well, I'm sure some people caught it, but as soon as I heard that, I was like, my spider sense was like, ooh, it's fascism. What's going on? Unbelievable. So talking about purging the government of anyone who disagrees with his administration, and this goes to the larger issue that we're seeing right now, specifically coming from the Republicans, specifically coming from Devin Nunes, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, regarding this memo, this four-page memo that supposedly shows Barack Obama colluding with the Justice Department to undermine and derail the Trump campaign. If they're so good at fixing elections, Hillary lost.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I said on Fox News, they're worse than fixing a contest than the Pennsylvania Polka King.
I watched the documentary.
Who fixed the election? Who fixed a beauty pageant for his wife? She got dead last, and he made her win. It was amazing.
It's the man who would be Polka King. It's only like an hour long
it's
documentary.
It's 67 minutes,
yeah,
I
it's
think.
Yeah, it's 67 minutes. It's great. I watched it night before last. It's amazing.
Honestly, if chairs had seatbelts, I'd say buckle in. Because it's a crazy story. And then I watched Jack Black actually made a movie about it. I watched half of that, too.
Is it any good?
Yeah, it's fine. Honestly, the documentary is better because it's just the guy, Jan Levon. Oh, my. The polka.
It's about a polka musician who started a Ponzi scheme on accident.
Oh, but he's also the American dream. And by the end of it, I like the guy. I don't think he did anything that wrong. There were a lot of people who, took advantage of him.
Fucked up pretty bad.
Yes,
yeah,
he's a man
with a dream who got in too deep.
Yes.
That could have gotten out and was given a couple of chances to get out.
He didn't know what else to do.
Still didn't get out.
I know it. Anyway, so check out that documentary. So when it goes to this release the memo stuff, Donald Trump, at the end of the State of the Union, said it's 100%. 100%, I'm going to release it. Despite the fact that his some members of his cabinet, and specifically when it comes to the generals, are like, I don't think we should release this.
This is a bad idea, yeah.
When it comes to Donald Trump, the question, can he release it? Yes. Anything a president releases is no longer classified, and he could tweet out everything tomorrow.
Yeah.
Technically, that would be 100% legal. If a president releases it, it's not classified, and that's well within his constitutional rights. So we have the situation where Devin Nunes wants to really take extraordinary steps using a provision that has never been used when it comes to this intelligence committee to release this memo that, again, supposedly shows this Obama administration colluding with intelligence communities to derail and undermine Donald Trump's campaign. It goes into that larger phenomenon that we're seeing right now of purging anyone who disagrees with the president. When it comes to Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, all those text messages that were exchanged, the 50,000 text messages, this idea Ron Johnson from Wisconsin was pushing of secret societies, which turned out to be a joke regarding Vladimir Putin and beefcake calendars that they were going to send around the office for a good giggle and a good laugh after theoretically Hillary Clinton won. This is the secret society that everyone was talking about. Everyone had visions of Bohemian Grove and scenes that I think should have been deleted from the movie JFK. but it proved to be nothing.
Yeah.
And so now we have a situation where the intelligence community, how that information was gathered, a lot of people think the Steele dossier, Christopher Steele, of course, that's where you get your PP tapes and all this other kind of stuff when it comes to economic interactions between Trump and his corporations and the Kremlin and Russian oligarchs and things like that. They're concerned that that will lead the door open for national security, for danger to national security and things like that. But is it
something where they're worried about revealing sources?
Revealing sources and tactics, right? It might not be a national security threat, what the actual document contains. It's how that information was received and how that how they got that information. That's where the national security threat is. Theoretically, they have agents in the field that may have worked on that. It's similar to what happened with the outing of like a Valerie Plame or something like that, you know? So they want to protect the operatives that are in the field. And I'm sure, because it's a relatively new memo going back just a year or so or 2 years, that they would still be a lot of active members who might have been individuals who collected or helped collect information that then would be used in this memo. So it just goes to the larger narrative, though, of the purging of government, of the purging of anyone who disagrees or dissents with this administration. I understand all administrations have the right, to have the people around that they want to have around. But this is a new level when it comes to what Marcus read regarding congressional approval to have cabinet members literally uproot and throw out anyone who has a different political opinion. And it goes to also what Donald Trump supposedly asked former FBI Director Andrew McCabe, who'd you vote for? And McCabe says, I don't vote. Because they know all they're all idiots. Anyone who works in Washington is like, I'm not voting for one of these slobs. You know, I just talked to this moron for you know, for whatever amount of time.
Yeah. That's what it is. They could fire anyone for undermining the public trust or failing the American people.
And what does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? I mean,
is undermining the public trust releasing accurate information about what the Trump administration is doing?
Yeah.
Is that what they think? Yeah. It's so subjective.
Yeah. Is undermining the public trust looking into Donald Trump's business dealings with Russia? Because, I mean, that's what's happening. But does that fall under undermining the public trust?
Whatever they want it to do.
Does that fall under failing the American people?
I do not want the president to dictate what undermines the public trust.
No.
The whole point is checks and balances on a congressional level, but also with these institutions.
We decide what undermines the public trust. We're the public. We're the public. We're the ones who decide who undermines the public trust.
So I did think that that was a fascinating line that I don't believe got enough attraction and enough attention.
Did not.
Donald Trump also did briefly talk about the opioid epidemic, although not really. He talked about this Albuquerque police officer, Ryan Hollett, who adopted a young child whose mother was addicted to heroin, but really kind of skirting the larger issue. And again, both sides are complicit. As you know, Big Pharma has given $10 million bucks, basically evenly, a little bit more to Republicans on the congressional side. They're both complicit in what's happening with the opioid addiction. And unless we get Big Pharma money out of there, we're not going to see any changes anytime soon.
I mean, that sort of thing.
Weed money.
Yeah.
Just start taking money from all these huge corporations that will be the $8 billion industry of marijuana.
Yeah. I mean, him pointing towards a cop is very telling, you know, with the opioid addiction, like pointing towards a cop and saying, like, look what the police are doing.
Incarceration is not a form incarceration does not lead to a wellness. It does not lead to any kind of
To recovery.
Yeah, to recovery. Yeah,
absolutely not. Because he can what Donald Trump can do is he can point at a cop in relation to the opioid crisis and not say, like, we're going to prevent that mother from dying in the first place. Mm-hmm. It's the cops will save you when those terrible people die. When those terrible people who are on opioids, whether it be, you know, your mother or your brother or your sister, or your kids, like, you know, it's removing that, you know, it's removing it. It's making it completely impersonal. It's vilifying them.
And they're all complicit. The FDA allowing OxyContin to be given to 11-year-olds a couple of years back. They're all complicit. And
Jeff Sessions trying to roll back medical marijuana.
This whole idea that just say no, you're getting it from a dude in a lab coat. You're supposed to respect. You're supposed to trust. Unless we want to completely undermine our the doctors and the medical institutions in this country. What are these kids supposed to do? If you're 11 and someone gives you an opioid and it's coming from a doctor, you want that 11-year-old to be like, this is not right.
Yeah.
No. We have to have some leadership coming from the top, and a lot of that is just empty rhetoric and empty words. And it's unfortunate because, as we mentioned briefly, I believe, did we mention this derailment? The Republicans
retreat. In the
beginning,
yes.
They're in West Virginia. Donald Trump won that state by 42%. I say they just get out there and go have fun in the town. They don't even bother going to your retreat. But places like West Virginia are devastated by opioids.
Yes.
And those are places that Trump has a foothold in. And he has an opportunity here to actually do something about it. And I hope, beyond hope, that he actually does. I just feel as if the writing, if I'm looking at the tea leaves here, focusing on law enforcement and focusing on that as a solution, it's not going to work. It's going to continue the problem, and more people are going to die. More people are going to be incarcerated. More families are going to be ripped apart. And this family that he applauded, which I love that they took in this child, that's unbelievable.
It's great.
But there's not a lot of folks like that.
No.
And where do the unwanted kids go?
Yeah. Why don't you prevent that woman from ODing in the first place?
Or do the best that you can. You know, we have to figure it out. I'm not talking about going the way of Vancouver, because they did it all wrong as well.
Yeah.
You know, we have to have rational policies in this country. Incarceration is not the key to the opioid epidemic.
Yep. The only tea leaf you need to look at is named Jeff Sessions, and that'll tell you exactly how Donald Trump is going to approach the opioid epidemic.
He was happy as hell, by the way. All right, just let's briefly go to Joe Kennedy III. I am so sick of people trying to bring back to life John F. Kennedy, okay? He's not coming back. I don't care who his descendants are, but I know, Marcus,
but this one's got red hair.
I know, which is nice. Okay. Now, you liked his speech a little bit more than I did.
I did.
I did not hate it.
Yeah.
I did not hate it.
Yeah.
He had a crowd, which I thought was a smart move, because usually it's like a huge crowd for the president clapping, going crazy, and then they just cut to someone who looks like they're giving a hostage speech.
Or it's just an old man in a diner in Virginia with
so
a bunch
odd.
Of silent patrons.
Why? This Guy Fieri back there just been like, this is not Flavortown. So he gave the rebuttal to the State of the Union. What did you think about it?
First of all, I know what happened with the lips.
Yes, we know what happened. We covered that.
Chapstick, I guarantee
you. I just don't get it, but we know
first
I don't
of all, first of all, Joe Kennedy III is an extremely clean-cut guy. In college, they called him the milkman. Because he didn't drink it. The only thing he drank, when they'd all go out to bars together, he'd only drink milk.
Oh, that'll get the youth involved. All right, so we got a guy who likes to suck down milk. I don't like it when people do things that are not normal for the institution that they're in.
Uh-huh.
If you're in a bar, you have a beer. Or, you know, just a mixed drink.
Have
or not if you're sober, maybe soda cranberry.
Coke.
Not milk. Can you imagine? What bars even have milk?
No, they got to do White Russians. Some of them have milk.
That's cream. And if he was slamming down cream, well, at least it's tougher.
Well, I think the guy, here's exactly what happened, is that he went up, they did a little test, a camera test, before he went on air, and his lips were fine. Before the speech, he got a little nervous, slathered on a lot of chapstick, and then once he got up on screen, they realized that the lighting they gave him was a little reflective.
I guess.
And that's why he was so shiny.
Looks like a Russian doll, Conan O'Brien, and then you open it up and this guy.
Well, yes. As far as the speech went, it's pretty standard Democratic stuff, where it's very lofty, high on rhetoric, low on ideas.
Yeah.
But I think this is a good first step towards what we were talking about last week, you know, where we're talking about, like, where do the Democrats go from here? How do the Democrats win? And I think that's what Joe Kennedy was trying to do. I think that's what the speech was trying to do, because I'm very apprehensive of saying this is what Joe Kennedy was trying to do, because this wasn't about Joe Kennedy. This was about the speech. What the speech was trying to do. Joe Kennedy did not write that speech, because it was a fantastic speech.
I thought it was just copy and paste.
I thought it was full
of catchphrases and
cliches. It was very well written,
and
I think.
I just feel like it was a copy and paste, and it wasn't reflective of what's actually going on. When it comes to, like, the economy and stuff, that's an area where Republicans are currently winning. So I don't know why he focused in the way that he did. I think there was a lot of inroads that he could have been making with immigration and things like that, but... You know, I wasn't feeling inspired.
He made a huge inroad with immigration. But first of all, the economy thing is that I think on paper, the economy is doing very, very well. On paper, everything's doing great.
Right.
But I think what the Democrats were doing there is that I think they were reaching out to the people that are looking around in their own lives and thinking, that's not happening in my life right now.
I mean,
I think they're reaching out to people with, you know, student loan debt. They're reaching out to people that are working three part-time jobs because, you know, no one will give them full-time work.
I
think they're speaking to those people. But as far as, like, immigration inroads, like, man, that Spanish part, it hit.
Very just reminded me of a W moment.
Hey, I think that hit like a motherfucker, man. I think it hit.
You
very
know,
hard.
Maybe I'm just clouded because I hate dynasty politics so much, and
yeah.
I hate just.
I think you got. You
how
got
difficult
it
was
from
it for
that.
Him to become a congressman? I mean, it's just.
Well, I think
if he was a senator of North Dakota,
yeah,
I'd be like, wow, Kennedy won in North Dakota. That's impressive.
Yeah, I think you got to remove a little bit from that, because I think when he hit that Spanish part, like I know being in a half Spanish household, Carolina lost her fucking mind.
All
you know,
right.
Because it felt like, you know, actually speaking towards a population that isn't just the white population.
No, that's true.
You know,
that's...
like I think that made huge inroads with immigration, because I think
all
that's
right.
who he needs to be speaking
maybe,
to.
Maybe I'm just a little bit cynical. I just felt like it was
and
just
I'm,
so
dude.
It was just such a political, like, and now I speak Spanish.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, wow, I can't believe it. You know, but
oh yeah.
But
and I'm super cynical too about this. I'm definitely not saying like this was a home run or that, you know, Joe Kennedy III for president or anything like that, because I think what if this is going to this could be seen as a turning point for the Democrats. if they actually do anything.
Well, if they can
because
get some, yeah.
It was very good lip service, but unless they actually do, if this is the start of the Democrats actually getting something done and possibly purging their own leadership a little bit, which would be fucking great.
Good luck.
If they got Pelosi and Schumer the fuck out of there,
dude,
that would be fantastic. If this was the beginning of a new, younger Democratic Party, then I'm saying that this point is going to be looked at pretty positively in the future. But if the Democrats just keep going and keep going and keep going, this is going to be it's going to be a tonsil stone moment. Like it's going to be something that we forget about, or it's going to be a joke that, you know, like remember the chapstick, like, you know,
Marco Rubio in the water.
Yeah, we're just remember Joe Kennedy's shiny lips. You know, that's all we're going to know about Joe Kennedy.
Yeah, I think sadly it's already kind of been branded that way. But that's true. I'm losing faith in the Democratic Party to actually purge these elderly maniacs. Get out of here. Diane Feinstein, as we covered in the last episode of last podcast on the left, knew Jim Jones in the 70s. What is going on? Doesn't anything disqualify you?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I think, you know, and bring up Carolina again, like she made a pretty good point, like after the speech. You know, it's kind of like when your buddy brings around like a new significant other. Mm. They're very cute and they're very nice and they're very fun to be around. You gotta kind of wait and see.
Yeah,
wait and see. Are like they look very nice. They seem very nice, and I think that's what Joe Kennedy is. And I think that's what this kind of new sort of. I think that's what this tack just that the Democratic Party has taken. It's like, you know, they seem nice. Let's see.
Aren't there not Kennedys? I just don't understand.
Kennedys, not Clintons. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Democrats really have we know how low their talent pool is.
I know.
And I think there are a lot of people that are jockeying for 2020 right now.
And as we talked about, you know, on last week's episode, the purity test for the Democratic Party is it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
So it's. I get it.
And they can't really put, like, you know, they can't put, like, Cory Booker or Elizabeth Warren. They can't put, because they also can't be shown, like, okay, well, if you put Elizabeth Warren up there, then.
Well, I don't think that she would do it anyway, nor Cory Booker. It's a funny position because it's actually kind of like, hey, good luck.
Exactly.
It's going to be a big moment for you. Yeah. But everyone's like, that's the death wish. That's the death of your career.
Yeah. But you can also see, like, if they put any of those people up there, if they put anyone besides, like, a somewhat unknown, then it's seen as kind of a tacit endorsement for 2020.
Yeah.
But because of how long presidential election cycles run.
Of course. We're almost doing that already. We're skipping the midterms entirely.
Yeah.
It's going to the general.
I think putting someone like Joe Kennedy up there, you know, the Democrats don't have a lot of choice.
Ted Kennedy killed a woman.
Yeah, but that doesn't have anything to do with Joe Kennedy.
I know.
Everyone's
going to bring it up. Everyone's going to be bringing up Ted Kennedy, JFK.
You brought
affairs.
Up Ted Kennedy, but you were the first person I saw to bring up Ted Kennedy.
I saw a couple of other people on Twitter.
I know it's that is unfair to bring up something uncle did.
I know. I'm just saying. I'm so sick. Anyway, it is fun. But yes, we'll see. I see what your point is, and. As I tweeted as well, I want like a Bonnie Globalstein or something. I want like just some, I really want something new. But the Democratic Party still does the old way, which is seniority based. Mm-hmm. That's how they rise people up through their political ranks. And that's why I think it's been detrimental to them.
Yeah. Oh, I
not like the Republicans are spring chickens by any means.
No,
obviously not. They had a similar process. They've actually kind of flipped process back in the day. The Republicans used to be much more like, well, Bob Dole, you've been around for 50 years. You're you're the nominee, you know. And since then, they've sort of flipped their way of electing nominees and. I don't know if they're happy or not happy when it comes to Donald Trump. Who the heck knows?
Who knows?
Either way, I hope everyone is okay that was in the Amtrak train. And I believe it was a dump truck driver. He might have passed away, which is very sad. And it might have been a derailment, in which case, go talk about infrastructure, Republicans. Infrastructure is extremely important.
Well, Donald Trump did mention that.
Yes, he did. And we need it because the fact that we live in the wealthiest country on earth and we're worried about taking trains is not a good sign.
No.
All right, everyone. Well, that was the state of our union.
Is it?
All right. Well, thanks so much for listening, everyone. Support all the shows here on the Last Podcast Network. Obviously, you know, Last Pod, Page 7, all the shows here.
Yeah.
And find us on Twitter at Ben Kissel, at Ben Kissel 1 on Instagram, Marcus Parks for everything. I'll do a hail yourselves, and I think that's about it.
Good night.
And good. Have good luck?
Good.
What am I supposed to do with that?
Good. Good night and
so long.
Sayonara.
All right.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from BreezeLine. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at BreezeLine.com.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay,
when the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone,
or you say,
hang it in there,
because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak,
then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support, anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.